Have we finally stopped the bleeding for U.S. layoffs? And S&P ratchets up the pressure on Spain. From APM, it's the Marketplace Midday Update podcast. I'm Jeff Horwich. Today is the 11th of October, 2012, 10, 11, 12, if you hadn't noticed. Nifty. We'll also talk Lance Armstrong, the death of a major drug lord in Mexico, and we're going to find out how they actually put the 84 folks in the seats for next Tuesday's town hall debate.
Let Marketplace be your guide to the modern world. Subscribe to the Marketplace Tech Report podcast. Find it on iTunes or at marketplace.org/podcasts.
We will start off with the new weekly claims for unemployment. New claims fell last week to their lowest level in 4.5 years since the start of the financial crisis, essentially. That's good fodder for Adolfo Laurenti, who is with me now. He's the deputy chief economist at Mesirow Financial in Chicago. Good morning. So before the overall hiring picture can improve, you know, people got to stop getting laid off. And this would seem like a good indication of that, yeah?
I would agree. This is a good progress. You can still claim that it's slow-paced, it's uneven around the country, but it's a progress nonetheless. It's consistent with other indicators of labor market we have seen in a recent week. First and foremost, the job report last week. So if you want to complain about the slow pace of the job market recovery, you have still plenty of evidence. You do not need to go and question the integrity of statistical agencies, which is silly. In fact, this is an improvement. It cannot be denied, no matter how short of expectation this may be. So let's just hope it will continue going forward despite all the uncertainty that still surrounds the economic outlook.
And let's take a look at the news out of Europe today. S&P has downgraded the sovereign debt of Spain. Accordingly, as I check now, the yield on Spanish bonds is going up, which, of course, only increases the pressure on Spain. What's S&P saying when they do this, and what do you make of the timing?
Well, this is not exactly a surprise. I think the downgrade is a result of the deepening recession in Spain, the social unrest, the delays in the government request for help from the European partners. At the same time, there is no denial that Spain is making huge efforts to improve the fiscal position with austerity and economic reform. So the timing is a little bit disappointing, to be honest. I think that the rating agency would claim they are referee. In reality, oftentimes they end up interjecting themselves into the fray and they become players. And I think not everyone is very comfortable with that.
Adolfo Laurenti with Mesirow Financial in Chicago. Thanks as always.
Thank you.
As Adolfo said, the S&P downgrade increases the pressure on Spain's government to either take a bailout, which it has put off for now, or make some extreme cuts to its budget. Meanwhile, today, the head of the International Monetary Fund sent kind of a conflicting message. She wants countries to stop cutting for now and start spending. At the IMF meeting in Tokyo, Chief Christine Lagarde said austerity in the near term will only make the global economy worse. With more on that, here's Marketplace's Stephen Beard.
Remember the IMF as it used to be, flinty and hard-hearted? In the debt crisis in Latin America in the 70s and 80s, it became synonymous with austerity. As the lender of last resort, the fund insisted on deep budget cuts and big tax hikes, and that brought short-term misery to millions of people. As a result, IMF officials were burned in effigy. But in the teeth of today's Eurozone debt crisis, the fund appears to be changing its tune. It now says deficit reductions doing more damage to the European economy than it thought, and that's hitting global growth. Here's Andrew Hilton of the CSFI think tank.
The IMF has had, as it were, a change of view, and it has decided that perhaps if Europe can do this much damage to the global economy, maybe the Europeans ought to think about a change of policy.
The IMF doesn't call for the easing of austerity in specific countries, but merely that the most troubled economies might be given more time to reduce their deficits. In London, I'm Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
All right, let's do the numbers. Markets are up in the first hours of trading on Wall Street. The Dow Industrials are up about 0.25% or 34 points. The NASDAQ up about 0.33%. And this S&P 500 verging on being up 0.5% as I check the numbers at this moment. Not a lot of notable earnings out today, but we do have Safeway, which also operates the Vons and Dominick's grocery chains. Safeway earnings got a boost because they sold off another brand of stores, but profits from continuing operations were lower So Safeway shares are down almost 4% at this hour. We've also got new data this morning on the U.S. trade deficit. With the rest of the world in a slump, it's not surprising that our exports fell in August to the lowest point in 6 months. In particular, demand was down for U.S.-made cars and agricultural products. It's been interesting to watch what's happened with the yield on Spanish bonds this morning. Contrary to what you might expect and what was actually happening as Adolfo and I had our conversation, the price of Spanish debt is actually going up at this hour. One reasonable explanation could be that the S&P downgrade might push Spain toward that sovereign bailout that it's been reluctant to take. Investors have, by and large, been rooting for that bailout to happen. Well, this week, Mexican Marines took out the leader of one of Mexico's most powerful and certainly its most violent drug gang. The Zetas are dominant along much of the U.S. border, and there's some hope this might disrupt their reign of terror there. Mexico is one of our primary trading partners, close behind Canada and China. But having the Zetas turn the border into a war zone hasn't done any favors for that cross-border trade. Ray Grauwander owns La Mariposa in Dallas. It is one of the largest and oldest retailers of Mexican imports in the U.S. Thanks so much for talking with me.
Thank you so much.
In recent years, how has the gang violence across the border affected business for you?
I've noticed my vendors are affected a lot. I've had to work out systems to get my merchandise up here. One of my vendors was held up twice on his way to come see me. Another one of my vendors from Querétaro, Mexico, was pulled out of his van, another border town, and beaten up, his van stolen, his merchandise stolen. So these gentlemen are not coming to see me as much as they used to. And everything has slowed down, and all prices have gone up.
Are you still buying products from the border towns?
Well, some, on the Texas side. A lot of the vendors I used to work with in the border towns have moved their operations onto the Texas side. And I have a custom broker like in New Laredo. If things come up from, say, Mexico City, they cross it for me. And it's held for me till I get there to pick it up or have it shipped.
How have your sales been?
It's a double-edged sword. Our in-store sales have actually gone up because our customers' reluctance to go to Mexico. And we see it both directions. People are petrified to go across the border, but yet they want their products. And so our in-store sales have gone up.
Are you encouraged by this week's development, the death of the leader of the Zetas?
Yes. I hope it works out. One of my most sad story is we supported two families in Juarez, Mexico, across from El Paso, making pinatas for over 25 years. They've stopped. They can't cross anymore. They're fearful for their lives. So after 25 years, we're buying 2,000 pinatas a year from them. I had to go to Mexico City to have them made, and the price doubled on me. And I don't know the solution. Jeff, I don't know what it is. I've been doing this for 35 years, and I still don't know how we help them come to peaceful resolution and get rid of the violence.
Ray Grauwander is the owner of La Mariposa, an import retail store in Dallas. Thank you.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Do you enjoy the music we play between stories? Visit the Marketplace Music section to browse playlists for all of our programs and to buy those songs on Amazon. A percentage of each purchase goes towards supporting our programs. Find more online at marketplace.org/music.
Tonight, the vice presidential candidates debate at 9 p.m. Eastern. The next presidential debate is on Tuesday, and this one's a town hall with 84 people in the audience. If you've ever wondered where these folks come from, we're going to lift the veil on that for today's Attitude Check.
And the latest poll numbers suggest margin of error.
There is somewhat of a disconnect.
It's conventional wisdom.
Our survey said!
Attitude Check is our weekly partnership with the polling firm Gallup and editor-in-chief Frank Newport. Hello, Frank.
Good morning.
I admit, I've never thought much about where these town hall participants come from, but in this case, I guess the answer is you, at least in part, right?
We're certainly involved. We've been working with the Commission on Presidential Debates. We here at Gallup since 1992. The first town hall format was at the University of Richmond back in that year with Clinton, Bush the Elder, and Ross Perot. And we recruited at that point uncommitted voters from around the Richmond area who came into the debate. And we've been doing it since. And this debate next Tuesday, October the 16th, is at Hofstra University. So again, we will be recruiting randomly uncommitted voters from around the Hofstra area and inviting them to come in and sit on stage, and some percentage of them will actually be asking the questions of Barack Obama and Mitt Romney.
Okay, how random can it be? You're not just yanking, you know, people eeny, meeny, miny, mo off the street, right?
Well, in essence, what we do is pretty random. We actually use the same format we use for our standard calling. We don't tell them why we're calling, and we take them through the screens. You know, who you're going to vote for? Are you committed? Might you change your mind? Are you undecided? And we're screening for uncommitted voters. And if they meet that qualification and a few other qualifications, then we say, congratulations, we're actually recruiting for the debate, and if you're able to come, then we are inviting you to officially be a participant, and that's how it works. So the base of it all is a random sample.
What advice do they get about what questions to ask? And what I really want to know is how much of that is planned out ahead of time?
We have nothing to do with the questions. We tell them they will be possibly one of the ones that ask the question, but we don't ask them what the question is they would ask in any way whatsoever. So they show up at the debate with nobody knowing what they might ask. Now, once they're there, Candy Crowley of CNN, who's a moderator, does meet with the group, like a jury foreman with the jury, and I think she'll communicate with them about questions that they might ask because she's trying to make sure it's a balance of domestic and foreign policy questions. But nobody other than she, the moderator, and the participants themselves know what the questions will be.
Frank Newport, editor-in-chief at Gallup, thank you.
My pleasure.
The U.S. Anti-Doping Agency has released a 1,000-page report documenting how it says Lance Armstrong and his teammates doped their way to victory. Armstrong has never tested positive. He denies everything. But this summer, he gave up his fight against the charges, and he's been stripped of his titles. Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman reports now on what the new report could mean for Armstrong's brand.
The vainqueur du Tour de France 2005, Lance Armstrong!
Lance Armstrong led Team U.S. Postal Service to sweep the Tour de France from 1999 to 2004. He also fought cancer and raised lots of money to help support people fighting and surviving the disease through his Livestrong organization.
I certainly don't think that this information is going to help his brand, but I don't think Nike's going to drop him, and I don't think that Livestrong is going to go defunct because of this news.
Patrick Risch is a sports economist at Webster University in St. Louis.
One thing that separates Lance Armstrong from a lot of these other cheaters is that Lance Armstrong beat cancer. And a lot of people out there that have benefited from the money Livestrong has raised, I think they're going to give Lance a pass.
Whether international cycling itself will be further tainted remains to be seen. And as for the U.S. Postal Service, well, it's got its own problems, even without the doping scandal. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
Mitchell, we just can't give that poor post office a break, can we? Finally, Mitt Romney's likability ratings have improved in recent days. About half of registered voters now take a positive view of him. But there's another Mitt in the news whose likability ratings are through the roof. Mittick, the orphaned baby walrus, who goes by Mitt, arrives today at his new home at Brooklyn's New York Aquarium. So 4 months ago, baby Mitt was picked up in pretty bad shape off the coast of Alaska. Today, he is 250 pounds or thereabouts, which on a walrus scale is still adorable. He reportedly likes to rest his head on people's laps and lick their fingers. Politicians will do a lot of things to improve their likability ratings, but they probably won't do that. That's all for today. I'm Jeff Horwich. This has been the Marketplace Midday Update podcast from APM, American Public Media.